There is an old evangelical hymn, I Am Bound for the Promised Land. In it, the author invites, won't you come and go with me? And that's the invitation most of us receive. We were invited by a church member, pastor, or friend to join them on a pilgrimage. A pilgrimage to Israel, the Holy Land, the land where Jesus walked. Won't you come and go? Long before we gathered, Covenant Tours was hard at work making sure our visit would be safe, comfortable, educational, inspiring, and affordable. Covenant Tours took special care to secure deluxe hotels, modern buses, drivers, licensed guides, and affordable airfares. Covenant Tours met us at the airport ready to lead us on an unforgettable journey of faith. Arriving in Israel at Ben-Gurion International Airport in Tel Aviv, our bus, expert driver, and guide were waiting as we cleared security. We were immediately immersed in a land as ancient in history and culture as any, but as modern and comfortable as home. As we journeyed to our hotel, we took in the sights of the modern city of Tel Aviv, stopping along the way to walk the streets of ancient Joppa, considered one of the world's oldest ports where Jonah set sail for Tarshish. Also home of Simon the Tanner, where Peter had the vision of unclean animals. Continuing north, we closely followed the Via Maris, across the valley of Jezreel, through Lower Galilee to the modern city of Tiberias. Tiberias of today is built over the top of the ruins of the ancient Roman city and is situated on the western side of the Sea of Galilee. Checking into a modern hotel overlooking the Sea of Galilee, we unpacked and prepared to spend our first night in Israel. As the sun rose over the Sea of Galilee and the Golan Heights the next morning, you couldn't avoid thinking that you were standing looking at the same sunrise Jesus did almost 2,000 years ago in nearby Capernaum. North of Tiberias along the Sea of Galilee is Tavga, from the Greek word heptagon, meaning seven springs. Inside the Church of the Multiplication is the rock where Jesus fed the 5,000 men, women, and children with five loaves and two fishes. All eight of them were filled, and they took up what was left over of the broken pieces, 12 baskets full. This is commemorated by one of the oldest and best-preserved Byzantine mosaics in Israel. Some of the original heart-shaped columns foundation stones of the Byzantine church are still here. Just north along the shore of the Sea of Galilee is the Church of the Beatitudes. It is on the site of the Sermon on the Mount, one of the most peaceful and beautiful places in Galilee. Jesus taught the disciples the Beatitudes and the Lord's Prayer from this location.
Who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled.
A short distance away is the site of Peter's Primacy, where Jesus appeared to the disciples after his resurrection. After cooking fish for their breakfast, Jesus asked, "Do you love me more than these?" Peter says, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus replies, "Feed my lambs," and asks again, "Do you love me?" Peter says, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus replies, "Tend my sheep," and asks, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep," which becomes the Great Commission. Caesarea Philippi is a city set on the southern slopes of the Hermon Range. It was originally built around one of the three sources that meet to create the Jordan River. A marvel of ancient living, this area was wrought with the worship of gods other than the one true God. Jesus and his disciples were said to have visited here. Jesus questioned his disciples, saying, "Who do people say that the Son of Man is?" And they said, "Some say John the Baptist, but others Elijah, and still others Jeremiah or one of the prophets." He said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" Simon Peter answered, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." During our time in the Galilee, we had the opportunity to eat lunch at a kibbutz, sort of a communal farm with restaurants and other business enterprises. The food was of a local flavor with Peter's fish from the Sea of Galilee. After lunch, a ride on the Sea of Galilee is an unforgettable experience. Most of Jesus' public ministry took place around the Sea of Galilee. This is the water he walked on, and the lake from which he called ordinary fishermen to be his disciples. The sea is actually a freshwater lake, the source of most of modern Israel's drinking water. While on it, we heard the story of the calming of the sea.
As Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon called Peter, and his brother Andrew. They were casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. "Come, follow me," Jesus said, "and I will make you fishers of men." At once they left their nets and followed him. Going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John. They were in a boat with their father Zebedee, preparing their nets. Jesus called them, and immediately they left the boat and their father and followed him.
Hearing the scriptures in the places where they happened, lift the black and white words from the page and give them color, sights, sounds, and smells that will stay with you forever. Among the sights you can see are the Golan Mountains and the village of Magdala, home of Mary Magdalene. The home of Peter was in Capernaum, a few miles away on the shore of the lake. This is also where Jesus made his home in Galilee for 20 months or so of public ministry, living with Peter and his family. He touched her hand, and the fever left her, and she got up and began to serve him. That evening they brought to him many who were possessed with demons, and he cast out the spirits with a word. In addition, the paralytic was lowered through the roof for healing. The remains of Peter's house and an early church built over it have been discovered. Over the site today is a modern church. Across the street are the remains of the 4th century synagogue. It was built on the foundation of the original synagogue where Jesus taught. Some of the original carvings from Jesus' day may have been used to rebuild the synagogue, including one showing the return of the Ark of the Covenant to Israel.
On the main holy day, the people used to come down into this area. We needed more space, a larger synagogue, to have a bigger church, like today they're building. So the same thing happened here, and that's really how they built it, kind of the basilica-style synagogue, that have those three main entrances.
Then we stopped at the Jordan River. A site is set aside for baptism in the water with which John baptized Jesus. People come from around the world to be immersed by their tradition or for our remembrance of baptism. Many take holy water home with them.
Those who follow after the theological thinking of John Wesley are clearly understanding that in holy baptism, it is not so much what we are doing for Christ in accepting His love for us, but in responding to the love of Christ which has been shown to us on the cross of Calvary, from which His cleansing blood flows for you and for me.
Jesus is mine.
We departed from Tiberias, bound for Jerusalem the next morning. The first stop was to hear Father Elias Shakur talk about his very unique school that seeks to educate all the people of Israel.
The descendants of Abraham should and are commissioned also to carry the same mission to the nation. Descendants, whether they are Christians, Muslims, or Jews. And that's what the Jewish custom teaches us. If those descendants of Abraham would no more reflect the lordship of God, no matter where they might be, that man would vomit them out. The covenant has never been an unconditional covenant. This is extremely important, brother. And I can say to you this morning, a very nice news, God is not a Christian either. You know that? He's not Christian. He would be a confused Christian if you were. Because what kind of Christian would decide to be reformed, re-reformed, or not yet reformed? Isn't it to churches and to Christians to do their utmost to be God's life and to make God look like us to be? It's important.
We moved on from there to Mount Carmel. This is the site of Elijah's contest with the priests of Baal. Mount Carmel is 16 miles long and is the northwest continuation of the hills of Samaria. Rising steeply from the Mediterranean, it reaches heights of 1,650 feet. Its surface is covered with unusually rich soil that has been known as the vineyards of God because of its beauty and abundant vegetation. Over the centuries, this place has been recognized as the location of the challenge between Elijah and the priests of Baal, between monotheism and paganism. Elijah challenged the 450 prophets of Baal to decide, if the Lord is God, follow him, but if Baal, then follow him. Elijah called forth to God and asked that fire be set to the altar. Then the fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt offering, the wood, the stones, and the dust, and even licked up the water that was in the trench. Caesarea by the Sea is an ancient Roman city named for Caesar. The amphitheater is still used today, and part of the Roman aqueduct is standing where it brought fresh water to the town. Remnants of past Roman glory still litter the grounds. This was the site of the baptism of Cornelio and the imprisonment of Paul prior to his journey to Rome. Megiddo is located on the edge of the plain of Jezreel, overlooking the ancient Via Maris, or the Way of the Sea. This was the highway from Egypt and the lower Mediterranean to Syria and the north. The plains today are the breadbasket of Israel. They may have been the site of many battles and are the site of the final battle of Armageddon in Revelations. Because of the repeated destructions and rebuilding, a high mound has accumulated where Megiddo's ruins are. Over 20 different city ruins have been excavated. One of these cities is the 10th century BC city of Solomon, which has been shown to have stables capable of housing 450 horses and 150 chariots, grain silos, and two palaces. You can still walk through the ingenious water tunnel that brought water from a hidden spring outside the city walls, so if the city was besieged, they would still have water. Before leaving Galilee, we visited Nazareth, where Jesus grew up and worked as a carpenter, like his father, for 30 years before beginning his public ministry. Today it is a bustling city, but in his day it was a small village of perhaps 150 people who traced their lineage to David. The Church of the Annunciation is built over the remains of Mary's house. There are actually two interconnected churches that are built one on top of the other. The two churches together are 80 feet high and 130 feet long, with a dome 170 feet high. The roof is covered with copper, and the cupola is topped with a lantern. The interior is adorned with artwork from around the world that honors the Virgin Mary. At the time of conception, Mary was pledged to Joseph for marriage. The angel Gabriel appeared to Mary proclaiming, "Do not be afraid, Mary. You have found favor with God, and now you will conceive in your womb and bear a son, and you will name him Jesus."
Names of the original synagogue of Jesus' son. Luke 4 talks about the place here, the column there, 2,000 years old. The upper part, I believe it's from Crusaders period. Where we are, where Jesus preached from the prophecy of Isaiah on the day of the Sabbath.
The traditional site of Cana is a few miles from the historical site of the village. The Cana Wedding Church commemorates the first miracle of Jesus when he had servants draw ordinary water into jars for the Jewish rites of purification and then turned the water into a fine wine. Those who witnessed this first miracle came to believe in him as the Son of God. Today, you can purchase representative wine jugs of the type used in traditional wedding services and even taste Cana's wine. Thank you. Beth Sheehan, located at the eastern end of the Jezreel Valley, was rediscovered in this century, having been buried in the sand after being destroyed by an earthquake in 70 AD. Jesus may have passed here on his last journey to Jerusalem, and also maybe near the location of his curing of the deaf man. The splendor of the Roman city from the time of Jesus can still be seen as it is being rebuilt. Many of its structures, including the amphitheater, streets, and the fresco floors of the bathhouses, are visible, having been well preserved by a layer of sand. Traveled, Jesus came to the city of Shechem. He and his disciples, being hungry, stopped at Jacob's well to seek water and find food. While the disciples went into town to get food, Jesus sat at the well. A Samaritan woman came to draw water, and Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink." The Samaritan woman said to him, "How is it that you, a Jew, ask a drink of me, a woman of Samaria?" Jesus answered, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that is saying to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." Today, there are very few Samaritans in the world, but Jacob's well is surrounded by the beginnings of a chapel that has never been finished. A time of prayer and worship was shared there, with small jugs of water being made available to bring home. Jericho is an oasis in the desert of the Jordan Valley. Due to its water from the spring of Elijah, it is considered the oldest inhabited city in the world and also is built at a lower elevation than any other city in the world. It was the first city taken by the tribes of Israel after crossing the Jordan. Joshua knocked down the walls and cursed anyone who should rebuild them. There are shops, vendors, and restaurants, and you may get your first chance to ride a camel here. Visible from Jericho is the traditional site of the Mount of Temptations, where Jesus spent 40 days in the wilderness. Today, there is a Greek Orthodox monastery on the side of the mountain. Today, Bethlehem is a large city near Jerusalem in what is now West Bank or Palestinian territory. Here, the Church of the Nativity marks God's outpouring of his love for the world, the birth of his son, Jesus Christ. It is the oldest Christian church in the world. The Persians did not destroy it in their sack of the Holy Lands because of the depiction of the Persian kings or magi who visited the Holy Child. The door has been lowered several times to prevent the entry of marauding troops, especially on horseback. Pieces of the mosaic floor from the 4th century church can still be seen. And she gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in bands of cloth and laid him in a manger because there was no place for them in the inn. Steps lead down to the grotto where the stable cave is located. On the marble floor, a silver star marks the birth site of Jesus. The manger area is a few feet away. Some of the primitive rock can be seen above the manger site. Thank you. Jesus stayed in Bethany when he visited Jerusalem, staying with Mary, Martha, and their brother Lazarus. Near the church of Lazarus is the tomb where Jesus raised him from the dead. The original street-level entrance was sealed by the Muslims, who built a mosque between the church of Lazarus and the tomb. In the 17th century, the Franciscans made a new entrance, and those steps are still used. Lazarus' tomb, cut from the rock of a cave, almost echoes the voice of Jesus when, after thanking his Father in heaven, he cried out, "Lazarus, come forth." Masada is a large rock jutting out of the desert near the Dead Sea. It is a fortress 1/2 mile long, 700 feet wide, rising 2,000 feet above the Dead Sea. Here in 40 BC, Herod the Great built a fortified palace to retire to in case of a Jewish revolt. Herod kept enough supplies here to last the rest of his life, although he never actually had to use it. In 70 AD, when the Romans destroyed Jerusalem and subdued all of Palestine, a band of Jews took the Roman garrison and made it a base of guerrilla attacks. 2 years later, the Roman general Sulla made an all-out assault, building a wall around the base of Masada with army camps at strategic sites. The remains of these walls can still be seen. For several months they tried, to no avail, to attack the fortress, finally building a ramp up to the top using Jewish slave labor. The nearly 1,000 Jews held out on top, not wanting to kill their slave kin, and knowing the end was near, made a pact to kill themselves rather than submit to slavery and rape by the Romans. Even the Roman soldiers admired the dignity and courage of their enemy, making for a hollow victory. The view of the Dead Sea and surrounding countryside gives a good idea of why this was such a strategic place. Under the floor of the synagogue were found the scrolls of the book of Ezekiel. The Dead Sea, so called because of the absence of any animal life in its water, is 1,300 feet below sea level, making it the lowest place on Earth. Many people come here to float in the mineral-rich waters to relieve skin problems or just keep their skin looking young. The chemical-rich water also provides one of Israel's primary industries and exports. Some of us couldn't resist floating on the salt-saturated water. Also overlooking the Dead Sea, on the north shores closer to Jerusalem, is Qumran. Here the Essenes, detesting the corrupt life in Jerusalem, built a community of monastic life, dedicated to meditation, poverty, and charity. They lived in caves and tents surrounding the community center, which served as a dining hall and scriptorium. This is where they practiced their trade of scribing scrolls of the scriptures. One of the most amazing finds of the Holy Lands was made in 1947 when a Bedouin shepherd boy, looking for a lost goat, threw a rock in a cave and heard pottery break. Inside were jars filled with scrolls where the Essenes had hid them 2,000 years earlier as the Roman soldiers advanced on Qumran on the way to crush the Jewish revolt in Jerusalem. A 1/50th scale model of Jerusalem as it appeared in Jesus' day allows you to see the city as it appeared 2,000 years ago. The temple and original sites are in relation to the old city. Thank you. view from the Mount of Olives is similar to that of Jesus' day, but today where the temple stood is the Golden Dome of the Rock on Mount Moriah. This is the site where Abraham prepared to sacrifice Isaac, or in the Muslim tradition, Ishmael. It is the most holy site in the world to Jews, being the location of the temple built by Solomon after his father David bought the land. Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the temple in 587 BC, but Herod the Great, in an attempt to win the Jewish favor, built it back grander than ever. This was the temple that Jesus cleared of the money changers. In Muslim tradition, this is the rock from which Muhammad ascended to heaven on his winged steed. Thus it ranks as the third holiest site in Islam behind Mecca and Medina. From the Temple Mound, you can see the back of the sealed Eastern or Golden Gate across the Kidron Valley to the Mount of Olives. The Eastern Gate was sealed by the Turks in 1530, and all three major religions believe the Messiah will enter Jerusalem through this gate. Just outside the Sheep's Gate in Jesus' day was the Pool of Bethesda. Today it is just inside St. Stephen's Gate. Invalids gathered here as the water had healing powers. The remains of the pools show that they had five porticos as reported by St. John. Here Jesus healed the man who had been crippled 38 years. He also healed people on the Sabbath. Therefore the Jews started persecuting Jesus because he was doing such things on the Sabbath. Nearby is the Church of St. Anne, one of the finest and best preserved of the 30 Crusader churches. It is built over the location that is venerated as the birthplace of Mary. The acoustics are great for group singing. On the traditional site of Mount Zion is the upper room. The church was rebuilt by the Crusaders as it appears today. This is where Jesus and the disciples ate the Last Supper. And Jesus introduced the communion service saying, "This is my body given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." This is also where Jesus appeared to the disciples after his resurrection and where they received the Holy Ghost. Below the location of the upper room is the Tomb of David. In sacredness to the Jews, it is second only to the Western Wall. It is carved out of stone and has been covered with an embroidered cloth and embellished with silver crowns of the Torah. Located nearby is the Western Wall, which is the last remaining remnant of the Second Temple. Titus left part of the wall standing in 70 AD when he destroyed the rest of the temple to show the greatness of his army. Many of our group were able to pray and thank God while visiting the Western Wall. The Jewish cemetery, with its traditional tombs on the Mount of Olives, overlooks the Kidron Valley. Here is where all three major religions believe the Judgment Day will take place, so many choose to be buried here to be the first resurrected. From the Mount of Olives, Jesus viewed before his triumphant Palm Sunday donkey ride through the Kidron Valley and into the East Gate would have allowed him to overlook the city of Jerusalem. Bethpage is a village located east of the summit and is where Jesus sent two disciples to get the colt Jesus was to ride into Jerusalem. As Jesus journeyed down that Palm Sunday, he stopped along the way to weep over Jerusalem. The Dominus Flevit was marked in the 12th century, and the current church was built in 1891. Moving farther along the Palm Sunday route, we come to Jesus' favorite spot around Jerusalem, the Garden of Gethsemane at the base of the Mount of Olives. Overlooking Jerusalem, it has escaped destruction and remains much as it was in Jesus' day. In fact, the olive trees, which still bear fruit, are 2,000 years old and may be the very ones Jesus prayed under. Next to the garden, the Church of All Nations was completed in 1924 with donations from 16 countries. It is over the site of a Byzantine chapel, covering the site where Jesus prayed in his hour of passion. In front of the altar is the rock where tradition says Jesus' sweat was like blood falling on the ground as he prayed, "My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Yet not what I want, but what you want." Directly then, Jesus was betrayed by Judas in the Garden of Gethsemane, who arrived with a large crowd with swords and clubs, and after greeting and kissing Jesus, he was arrested by those sent from the chief priests and elders. One of the most beautiful churches in Jerusalem is the Assumptionist Father's Church, built over the site of the palace of the high priest Caiaphas. Jesus was brought here by those who arrested him in the Garden of Gethsemane. This was the site of his first trial before the priests. Peter, who had followed Jesus to see what would happen, came into the courtyard. Here he denied Jesus three times before the cock crowed, fulfilling Jesus' words. Located below Caiaphas' house was a dungeon, into which Jesus may have been cast after his trial, awaiting Governor Pilate. One can conjecture what Jesus may have prayed about during this time. Outside the house, steps have recently been discovered that date from Jesus' time. Since they are the most direct route into the upper city, they may well have been the very stones Jesus walked upon after his first trial. After Jesus' trial by Caiaphas, he would have been sent to the Antonio Fortress. It was named by Herod after his friend Mark Antony and included the governor's palace. It served as the headquarters for the Roman legions, containing a paved square for troop parades and training. Here Jesus was condemned to death, scourged, mocked by the soldiers, and crowned with thorns. The actual Roman pavement, or lithostratos, is still visible beneath the Franciscan convent. Here, John said Pontius Pilate sat down in the judgment seat at the place known as the pavement. Traces of games played by the Roman soldiers are carved into the stones. One, called the King's Game, played with dice, may have been used with Jesus as the mocked subject. The Via Dolorosa, or Way of Sorrows, is one of the most famous walks in the world. It marks the route Jesus took from Pilate's palace to Calvary. Of course, the actual streets were destroyed by Titus in 70 AD, so most of the sites are traditional, except the first two in the fortress and the last five in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. The busy narrow streets give you a pretty good idea of what Jesus' final walk would have been like. Station 3 is where Jesus falls under the cross for the first time, 4 where he met his mother, 5 where Jesus was weak, and they enlisted a passerby, Simon of Cyrene, father of Slexander and Rufus, who was coming in from the country to carry his cross. 6 is where Veronica wiped the sweat from Jesus' face. And then finally, you reach the Judgment Gate, which is housed in a Franciscan chapel. This is where Jesus left the city through the gate on his way up the steep climb to Calvary. The Church of the Holy Sepulchre is the holiest site in Christendom. The current church was built by the Crusaders over the site preserved by early Christian churches, temples, and Constantinople. At the top level of the church is Calvary, the site of the crucifixion of Christ. The top of the rock is under the altar, where you can put your hand in the hole and said to have held the cross. The site of Golgotha, or place of the skull, would have been outside the city walls on a high rock left looking like a skull after quarrying for stones, where it would have been visible to the city as a warning against crime. The church is believed to have been outside the city walls of Jesus' time due to the discovery of burial tombs, which Jews would not have allowed to be placed inside the walls of the city. Also in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre is the empty tomb. Nearby is a rock slab, venerated as the place where Jesus was anointed before being placed in a new tomb belonging to Joseph of Arimathea. The empty tomb was destroyed by the Caliph Hakim in 1009. The current Muscovite cupola was built over the site in 1810 by the Russians and Greek Orthodox. With the many destructions of Jerusalem over the centuries, it is hard to be certain about the actual location of many sites. One site discovered in 1843 by British General Charles Gordon is believed by many to be the actual Golgotha. It certainly has the appearance of the place of the skull. The discovery nearby of a tomb carved in the rock lends credence to the find. An association was formed and has established a garden at the tomb, making it a comfortable place to celebrate the risen Lord. Here we join together in a final communion service with cups carved of olive wood from Bethlehem.
Taking Jesus' body, the two of them wrapped it with the spices in strips of linen. This was in accordance with Jewish burial custom. At the place where Jesus was crucified, there was a garden. And in the garden, a new tomb in which no one had ever been laid. Because it was the Jewish day of preparation, and since the tomb was nearby, they laid Jesus there.
The symbolism of this bread is very special. I wish I had a larger piece of it to show to you, but it is unleavened. And that is a symbol to us of the sinlessness of Jesus. It is perforated, reminding us of the nails that were driven into his hand. It is blistered, reminding us of the ways in which Jesus was battered, scourged back at the house of Caiaphas and along the way. It is striped, reminding us of those words of Scripture, "By his stripes we shall be healed." The matzah bread is the perfect symbol for Jesus.
It was a time to reflect on all that we had seen and heard during our journey in the Holy Land. No matter which sites are historical or traditional, what matters is that the Lord we serve is not here. He is risen and resides in each of us.
Salvation to